Blog Talk Radio.
Alright, good evening. One day? Okay, sorry about that. One day, an old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He says, "There's a fight that's going on inside me. And it's a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf is evil. It is angry, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other wolf," he continued, "is good. This wolf is peace, joy, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. Now this same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." The grandson sat there, thought about it for a minute, and asked the grandfather, "Well, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Yeah.
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, ¿qué tal? Namaste, Oki, and welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, broadcasting live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. It is February 7th, 2022, first Monday of the month of February. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties every show, well, every, you know, anyway, I'm tripping already. There he is, holding down the other half of our hosting duties. They call him the Lions Historian, or Unk. You know, whether we're talking man to man or we're talking son to son, he's always my best friend, my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy Yo?
Hey, Wilfredo. Que pasa, mi amigo? ¿Cómo está?
Hey, bien, bien. You too?
I don't know why I did that, yeah.
There you go. All right.
How ignorant I am. Yeah, uh-oh. Am I having technical problems?
No, you're good. I thought I was having a double feed for a second, but you sound good.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah. Because I thought I caught it earlier, you know. So, you know, I my equipment, what can I say? You know, I still got chipmunks in the Ferris wheel. You know, that's how old my stuff is.
I got my stuff hooked up to my bicycle. I'm pedaling as we speak right now, so I know what you mean.
I'm pedaling. Yeah. How was your weekend?
Oh, weekend was good. Weekend was good. Stayed warm. Stayed productive. Yeah, it was
what's
cool.
What's the weather like up that? What's the weather like up that away, man?
You know, it's cold. Warmed up, man. It got up to the 30s today. You know, people been out washing their cars, all excited.
Man.
You know. So, you know, we're dancing in the streets, man, at 32 degrees. But you know, it's winter in Chicago, you know. I don't know. Is there a song called Winter in Chicago? If not, there should be. You know, it's cool. It's cold, you know, layering up, staying warm. But, you know, making do. Shoveling out people, bailing people out. There's still snow piled up. You know how that goes. I think we lost you. All right. Well, Dad will come back in a minute. Guess we're having some tech issues tonight. We blame it on the snow, right? The cold fronts that's coming in, especially down there in Dallas. They're probably still freaking out from all the weather down there. But up here, you know, it's business as usual. I see you, Adam. You know what I'm talking about. I know you know what it's like up there where you at. But anyway, we're going to keep going here. Before we jump into any subject matters or anything like that, as always, Dad and I like to we'll blame it on the rain. Right on, Adam. I almost had me singing for a second, but I want to keep the audience here listening to the show. But I know some of y'all might have wanted to sing it too. But anyway, before we get going here and before I embarrass myself, it's a few reminders that Dad and I like to drop to everybody. Sorry about that. Excuse me. The first reminder is, as always, grab a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, post-it note, a marker. I don't know what you got. The back of an envelope, a napkin. Here on the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, there's a model that sometimes we follow. Why use 100 words when 1,000 words will do? So sometimes our context can get a little lengthy. You may have questions. You may have some comments. We don't want you to forget those questions or comments. So we want to make sure that you've got something to write with. So write down those questions, write down those comments. And who knows, you might even pick up something you didn't know from our discussion, or you may have something that you want to share with us and the audience. And that brings us to our second reminder. Unlike other podcasts, we have opportunities for you to engage, for us to engage with each other live every Monday and Wednesday. So there's a couple of ways you can do that. The first way is that you can call in directly. Our area code is 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6094. Press 1 on the keypad. That'll put your number in the queue, and that'll let us know that you want to come on in and, you know, ask a question, a comment, a shout-out, anything like that. The chat room is open as well on the Blog Talk Radio site, which you can engage when we're on our live broadcast. All you have to do is set up a Blog Talk Radio account, and you can engage with us right there. I think Dad's coming in a second. I think he's got it hooked back up. And then, of course, we always have Facebook. I keep an eye on Facebook, too, if you want to make a comment on the event page on Facebook. But before we get going here, I'd just like to give a couple of PSAs. And one of the PSAs is just remember, you can engage with us and everybody else. But just don't be a jerk about it, you know, during our show. We're not in competition with anyone. It's not a contest to see who's the smartest person in the room. We just prefer positive and respectful adult dialogue. So that's our PSA for tonight's show. So are you there, Dad? Did you make it back? How are you doing? You got some duct tape?
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so, man. I don't know what's up. You know, I mean, that caught me completely off guard. So hopefully I'm broadcasting live and well once again.
Well, I hear you. You're 10-4 over
okay,
here.
Okay, that's all that matters. All right.
Adam said we'll blame it on the rain, so.
Yeah,
I don't
saw his comment. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
But it's not raining here.
It is or it's not?
No, it's not raining here. But anyway, it's just as well because I wasn't talking about anything, and I was taking away your space, man. So I tuned back in to hear the, you know, to hear the way you do it like nobody else can. Beautiful, man. Yeah, everybody should be ready to rock now.
Our reminders as always. So other than that, you're doing all right? How was your weekend?
Well, yeah, it was. When you're retired, you know, every day is a weekend.
Right on.
You know,
right on.
Yeah, on Monday I get ready for the weekend, man. So, you know, but, you know, I'm kind of down, kind of depressed, kind of frustrated, kind of angry, kind of,
yeah.
You know, kind of.
Yeah.
Reminding myself of what it means to be functionally schizophrenic and, you know, paranoid in black, I guess. You know, I don't know another way to put it. But you know what they say, just because I'm paranoid don't mean they ain't talking about me behind my back.
Right.
Anyway, yes, frustrating weekend. You know, and that's become the commonplace. It's been the commonplace for me anyway. And sometimes, though, it just gets to me a little bit more than other times. In this particular time, you know, with the shooting of Amir Locke, 22-year-old brother up in Minneapolis, you know, just reminds me again, you know, the fragility of black people in America. And also just continues to bring back, you know, the question in my mind is, you know, just what did black people do to America to deserve this ongoing treatment? I just don't understand it. There's nothing can be said to me, and there's nothing I can think of that will help me understand it. I mean, all of this is post-Civil War crap. So we're being punished for wanting and gaining some semblance of freedom in a democratic society. See, I mean, that's the trip of all trips. And it seems that by now the whole theme of the Civil War should be a part of American lore, you know, of history, of known history, of taught history, you know, of explained history, you know, and not this issue that this country seems to have with facts. But before I get into all that, man, or before I even go any further, or before I say anything else, you know, how you doing? Is there something you wanted to, you know, roll out on the carpet, man, before I start my ranting? Oh, before that, if I may, I want to officially express an apology to your cousin Adam. You know, more than one person said I was kind of rough on the brother last week, and I'll accept that. I'll take it, and I'm apologizing for it. And I'm not even going to say but. It's hard. My lip is bleeding, but I'm not going to say but. I just want to, you know, express my apology if, in fact, I was unduly curt. That was one word somebody used. And hard on my man, you know, just for mentioning Lindsey Graham. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. Go ahead, man.
Okay. No, that's cool. You know, the one thing about our relationship with Adam, for those that are listening, and I know Adam's already chomping at the bit, but, you know, we have history with each other, you know, all three of us in our discussions and dialogue. So I just saying, I respect that apology, and just saying to the listening audience out there, you know, I kind of understand where you're coming from, but it's, I just saying, I'm not making excuses, but it's just when you have a sense of familiarity with someone, things have just become a little bit more easy to kind of be yourself. And I know Dad doesn't do anything to be spiteful or disrespectful or anything like that. So that's just my little two cents. But that's cool. You know, respect. Respect that. That's
yeah. All. Yeah. And it's also a warning.
Jeez.
All of you would be callers, you know, like this is a time that is real to me. And this is a talk show. So that means, you know, all themes are open for debate, dialogue, or argument even. So just so you know, I'm not the kind of host is always like my son, you know, caller friendly. Some things, you know, get me stirred, and I don't do a good job most of the time I do, but sometimes I don't do a good job of harnessing my reactions. And if you ever want to get a rise out of me, you know, there's two names you can just throw out at any time. if you just even want to get me off track or lose my train of thought, you know, it's Donald Trump and Leslie Graham. You know, so just, and you know, minority also is another one. Oh my God. But I'm trying to get better at all this. So anyway. And I'm hoping, you know, that this doesn't have to go any farther. There's no need for any additional dialogue or no, you know, I hope Adam's not feeling like he needs to say anything and, you know, to smooth out the rough ends, or, you know, let's just move on to the topics at hand. And if there's anything else we need to say on any other level, it can be done personally, but we only have an hour, and we've already cut into over 15 minutes of it. So what's on my plate right now is this shooting. Last week, we didn't – one of the things I wanted to get to last week was to talk to some degree about this – not really the Supreme Court, but to touch on a little bit of the Supreme Court – and also the issue with the pending President Biden appointment to the Supreme Court. We've talked about six of the leading female candidates, black female candidates, and I'm already seeing on the news there's some backlash coming from the Democratic progressives about one name that Biden is pushing. I don't understand what that's for, and I haven't read enough about it to get into any real comment about it, which for all practical purposes will avoid. But I tell you, man, this this most recent shooting it really did take the air out of my sails. And I don't know. I want to talk about it, but at the same time, I want to, you know, bide my time and be sure that, you know, you could first say about what we're talking about tonight. Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. It's been, what,
are you
two
sure?
Years? It's been like, what, 2 years since Breonna Taylor was killed?
Yeah.
You know. I've been pretty numb, you know, in these last few days since the last show, hearing about things, but I haven't been really responsive to a lot. I'm still wondering why there's even no knock law warrants in the first place, you know, or why isn't there more changes being made so this doesn't happen. But, I mean, here we are again. I don't really know how to start it, you know, as you put it, to get it going here. But You know,
I
looking
just thought
up.
Maybe there was even something else you wanted to talk about. You know, I mean, like, I didn't want to let this, which I wanted to talk about, get in the way of anything else that you may have had on your slate. So don't feel like you have to make a comment about this. If you, you know, if I wasn't intended to broadside you with that.
No, broadside at all. I mean, because that was on my list. You know, there's the, you know, we mentioned the thing with the NFL, you know, and things like that. But no, I mean, we're fine. I mean, I think everybody kind of has an idea on, you know, where we might go, and you kind of kicked it off already, so it's cool. But I'm just saying, like, this, I think this is an example of what I've kind of been feeling myself. You know, for you, it kind of knocked the wind out. For me, I've been just not feeling anything. You know, I'm looking up information, trying to figure out how many more people have been killed, you know, or you know, that there's been innocent people that's been victims of these no-knock or quick-knock warrants, you know, and I can't find any information past 2016. And the only information I did find was from 2010 to 2016. 81 civilians and 13 law officers have died in issuing these warrants. And I haven't found any other information that since then, but we're still seeing people, innocent people, getting caught in these crossfires. I haven't heard of, and I'm sure there may be a few white people, but, you know, I just would like to compare and just see the reasons for these no-knock warrants. You know, some states say that they can't use it. Some states say they can use it. And so there's still a lot of things that, as I go deeper in the rabbit hole, I really don't know a lot about. So that's just kind of where I'm at with it. As far as just the subject matter in general.
Well, before we get more into that, what's up with Brian Flores, man? That's a related issue, or not related to no knock, you know, law, but related to, you know, a charge of racist tactics, you know, and has reached, I guess, you know, has reached at least a place of acknowledgement in the NFL. I mean, like, we always have these barbershop conversations, you know, as black men, let's say, in this particular venue. I can't speak about beauty parlors or beauty salons, but I know it's always a barbershop conversation every day, you know, about black issues in sports. So this, to me, and I'm sure to you, is not like, oh, my God, really? Racism and hiring practices in the NFL? Surely that can also be a problem with ownership in the NFL. You know, I mean, so, you know, is that something that's really valid that he would bring these lawsuits to? I'm being facetious, obviously. You know, but this lawsuit brings to light, to me anyway, you know, the same theme that has resonated in my body all my life. One issue, and I love the sound of that train. One issue.
I was like,
know,
dang it, I couldn't mute my phone into my mic in time.
Oh, man, oh, that's a beautiful sound. You know, one related issue after another, and it's always about racism in America, and it's always, to me, about what are they crying about now, you know, and that's, for me, the issue that is really starting to dog my trail now. I'm finding that I'm struggling, man, and it's hard for me to just say it, but I don't know another way to say it, but to say it, it's hard for me to know where I'm supposed to go with my conversation with others. Like, I'm comfortable with my black brethren for the most part, even if there's conversation that some of my circle of black friends don't agree with, it's always going to be to some, well, for the most part, a healthy debate. But I can't say that about my circle of white friends, whether they be relatives or associates or relationships long past. It seems that that conversation is either abridged, abbreviated, or otherwise gently tipped around for the most part, if even talked about at all. And that's the thing that is weighing on my nerves right now and my consciousness more than anything else. You know, it's this continuous thing that has affected me as a black man all my life. And I'm finding that all of what this has been about and all of what it has gone into the very fiber of the makeup of me has kept me in this controlled kind of circling the airport feeling that I don't want to embarrass anybody. I don't want anybody white. That's a friend or an associate or a relative even, although my relatives, you know, I mean, you know, we're all kind of, we're used to each other, regardless.
So, right, you know, like Adam.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Adam ain't white.
No, I'm saying you said relative.
yeah, white relative.
Go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
I'm talking about. Yeah. You know, and it's a struggle, and it's been a struggle. I remember when I was in the Army, you know, my cousin Marty, you know, really wanted to, you know, go to West Point. And he had everything in place to go. You know, his older brother went and graduated and decorated, you know, and, you know, also went on to be an appointee in a sub role in Obama's cabinet. But anyway, Marty always wanted to go to West Point, and he was refused for a physical issue. And while I was in the service, all of a sudden I get this tape from my cousin and the brother going, he going full, you know, revolutionary. All of a sudden he went from wanting to be a West Point to a Black Panther. And it's like, damn, dude. And he sent me this tape. Oh, man. You know, and all my white friends and I gathered around to hear, you know, tape recording from home. And Marty started out, then he started, you know, with his power to the people diatribe. And at one point said, you know, I know you got white friends there in the service. I got white friends, too. Well, let me tell you, and at that point I had to cut it off. And I just... You know, I told the dude, hey, you know, technical difficulties, we'll check back in later. And I had to sneak off and go outside and find a place I could huddle by myself and listen to the rest of his tape. And that seems so synonymous with what my life has been like. You know, it's this conversation, but it's never the conversation I want to have. It's never the conversation I need to have. It's always the conversation that is easy, you know, and it's gotten to the point, and I've bowed out of some clubs and some groups I've been involved in that were predominantly white simply because the themes of my issues just weren't ever the forefront of what we talked about. And Ralph Ellison said it best, you know, I am an invisible man. It is sometimes advantageous to be invisible, although it can be sometimes wearing on the nerves. And that wearing on the nerves, it's kind of hit me at my last nerve with this most recent killing of this 22-year-old young brother asleep on somebody's couch. You know, and Brian Flores saying, you know, there's these issues of race, these issues of racism, these racist practices that aren't being talked about in the NFL. And I already know that just by him saying that and listening to his interview, that he already knows that the first wave is going to be, you know, an attack on him. The second wave is going to be a denial. And the third wave is going to be somewhat of an insult reaction, like, what do you have to complain about?
How dare you?
You're making all this money. How dare you? Right. Yeah, we don't even. How dare you? You're right. That wraps it up, right? Don't even have. How dare you? So, one extreme to the other, and all the stuff in between. In the meantime, the Olympics is going on like none of this is even happening. You know, or I turn on the TV and I see something about this reality show, I guess, I don't know, called The Bachelor. And I'm like, you know, is this like an alternate universe I live in? I mean, do these issues, but I guess if it doesn't generate ratings and response, I have to just accept the fact that we live in a country that is fixated on entertainment. And things like news and things like history and things like current events and things like civil issues and, you know, civil unrest and things. Fellow Americans, just doesn't seem to be what the call to arms is right now. It's like, yeah, we know all that. But in the meantime, let's see what the latest episode of, you know, The Bachelor has to offer, or some other things like Black Women of Atlanta. I don't know what the name of that show is. It's like, you know, what's up? I'm living in this duality of purpose, this functional schizophrenia that tells me, you know, I know, you know, what's going on, and I know you know what's going on, but I know that I can't act like you know what's going on, that I know you know what's going on. Instead, I have to present myself within the context of that which allows me a so-called freedom to express myself. That's a functional schizophrenia, y'all. You know, and it's just worn me to a nub. I'm starting to come unraveled a little bit, you know, that I'm hunkered down in my nice little room. I'm growing this long, gray. I'm starting to look like Gandalf. This goes out of control.
Oh man, I gotta bring all your staff back to you then. All your canes and staffs, man. You're doing the Gandalf thing.
Yeah, especially that white one, man. Especially that white one you got. You know, I mean, yeah. And, you know, I'm talking about going to art school. It's like I'm just starting to disappear within myself. This stuff is, and the thing is, in the meantime, this orange thing, strange character, is still being shoved in my face every day. And he ain't been president for over a year. You know, what's up with that? You know, I was watching a movie the other night, and I know you saw it not too long ago, The Dead Zone. You know, and it's like,
that's one of my favorites.
And there's a line in that movie that says, you know, what's wrong with these people? Can't they see through this turkey? You know. He might just win.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, things like that just leap out at me. But I tell you, man, the thing that got me today, but do you want to talk about Brian Flores first before I?
I mean, I'm sitting here wondering which way to go. I wanted to jump in, but I just wasn't even sure which way to go with it, because you're right. Just looking at these two topics, you know, just within these two situations that's occurred within the last couple of weeks, let's say, it engulfs so much with the issues that Black Americans have been dealing with. And then it gets to the point where, you know, like you said, oh, you just complaining, stop complaining. You got it good. You just got to keep working hard and blah, 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 blah. You know, all the stuff we've heard before. And it's like, it's hard to even make the point. You know, it's hard to even have that discussion. Like you said, where do I go in the conversation? Because usually it's like the first foot you put out there, it's either going to get the pinky toe going to get shot. You're going to somebody just going to blatantly drop something on your foot. I don't know what, you know, it's just like, damn. You know, I can't even get started.
I'm sorry.
You know? I thought that was more effective. You know, and we've talked a lot about with the media and what's sexy, and you know,
what's sexy. Yeah.
Let me. I'm gonna be very generalized about it, but we were sexy. You know, it seems that Black America at times was sexy, but it's not what's cut it now. Like you said, now it's on to something else, just another commodity. You know, and it might come back around again, but. I don't know. I don't even know if that makes sense, but it just made me feel like that when we talk about, you talk about what's on the, you know, The Bachelor and all this other stuff that's out there. And then with the orange guy, you know, I'm not even going to, you know, talk about how I felt. And I felt like the guy in the dead zone, like, can't somebody see this guy might win? You know, and that was a long time ago. But anyway, you know, and I'm worried about 2024, you know? I mean.
That's a
possibility, you know, and I hate that I see him. I agree with you. I hate that I see him. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's saying it's only 2 years away. It's only 2 years away. But if you start that conversation, I might get those looks like what happened before he was elected. So, you know, it's like, where do I go? I don't even know. There's an article that you posted on Facebook, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's response to what was happening in the NFL. You know, and I hope you don't mind. I just wanted to touch on it for a minute. And I think that the beginning of this article is pretty much, again, with all the issues that we're dealing with. You know, like Brian Flores is suing the National Football League. And the only question he asks is, what took so long? What took so long?
Yeah.
And it's like all these things, and it just takes forever for something to properly be done. Not just for something to be done, because it'd be like, well, something needs to be done. And then you get the Band-Aid, and then eventually the Band-Aid don't hold anymore. We need to, you know, what's effectively done? You know, like you say, Black Lives Matter also. It's like we have to add these extra pieces of context to make the point even clearer. I don't know. But what took so long? Why is it still 2 years after this young lady, you know, was subject to a crossfire in her home in the same state? Like you said, we just dealing with George Floyd in the same state. This guy gets cut down trying to sleep. And the only reason why he shot because he's trying to protect himself because he's just trying to, you know, I think he was a delivery driver or something like that. And I think he, talking about Amir Locke, you know, he had a firearm because of, you know, he's a self-employed driver, kind of like what I do.
It doesn't even matter.
I know.
See,
I'm
and
just
this
saying.
Is what happens? Yeah.
I get it. You know, we get into that discussion and why, you know, and it's like, why is he having a gun? Oh, the parents say that he was a young
even,
kid, and it
that
and
has
it brings
nothing.
Us, then it sounds like the victim.
I'm sorry.
Then it
there
sounds like.
Yeah.
No, it's okay, because that's what happens. Then it sounds like the victim is having to justify their own death. So here Amir Locke is having to justify his own death now for doing nothing. You know, here Brian Flores here is putting his career on the line to identify something that everybody knows about, but don't nobody want to do nothing about it. You know, I've had issues with the NFL. Well, I'm just saying. What?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that nobody wants to do anything about it. I think what Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said is what took so long. So that means, you know, something is being said about it, which is the first step towards something being done. But what took so long is the issue, you know, now that someone has stepped. It's just, everything with black folks in America always has to have this slow step, you know, and this slow step, no matter, I mean, where do you want to start? Jackie Robinson, you know, Jesse Owens, the Barack Obama, I mean, this, you know, this slow step. And the question is always the same. What took so long? You know, it's the slow step cause of the lack of knowledge, the lack of awareness, the lack of effective teaching, you know, and true teaching about American society and American history. You know, if, you know, even today, right now, as we're talking, we can talk what we're talking about, and we're dealing in facts, like whether the, you know, the gun issue doesn't matter still. Okay, it does, okay, because that's there. But you can't just leave it at the gun. The whole thing has to be talked about to even understand, you know, what the whole purpose of the no-knock approach was done for in the first place. And I tell you something, if SWAT's doing the no-knock, somebody going to get hurt. You know, that's just the nature of what these guys are. I mean, it's just like firemen go to a fire. They're jacked. They're ready to do battle with the fire. Yeah. You know, they're not going to answer a fire alarm to pass out cookies to the people, the gawkers. You know, they strapped. They ready to do battle with this fire. SWAT's called in. It ain't public announcements that they're about to do. You know, that ain't what they trained for, you know. Excuse me for laughing.
Good evening. Your neighborhood SWAT team is here.
Yeah,
we
man,
need to...
Like, yeah, man. If you bring a SWAT in, you better believe it's a no-knock warrant. You know, that's why they're coming. You know, so they are 6 to 9 seconds to respond to somebody all of a sudden walking into your living room, not even yours. I mean, this is the thing. My man was sleeping on a friend's couch. It wasn't even his crib. You know, they walk in. They don't knock nothing down. They come in with a key. There's something. Now think about Will. Mark. Think about it, man. You're laying on you're at my crib, and you're on that couch, you know, and I'm out. And you know how close the couch was to the door at my mother-in-law's crib, right, when I was renting it. And all of a sudden, there's people standing there. They're screaming, "Get on the floor! Get on the floor! Get on the floor! Get on the floor!" And they pointing shit at you. Excuse my leg. You know, and they're masked. Now, I don't know. It takes me a while to wake up under normal circumstances. Usually, when I open my eyes, it's like, "Hey, I got to get up already. I got 5 more minutes." But I got somebody screaming at me with masks on and pointing guns, and I'm going. You know, and I'm. I had 6 to 9 seconds to say, "Oh hell, I got this gun in my hand. Oh, you know, maybe I better help tuck it back under the plate." Sick. Will, how long does it take you when you wake up to know you're awake? I'm not even going to go there, man. Yeah, I mean, man.
Yeah.
Look, man. I've opened my eyes. And for a moment think, "Oh, everything is good with God in my world." And then in that 10th second, I'm remembering all the crap that I have left undone. I remember all the issues that happened, and suddenly did not start forming. Now, that's just my normal day. I got 6 to 9. How do you practice that? How do you train somebody to respond to that? I mean, I think people have gotten so conditioned to indifference, they're not even thinking about what it would be like to have, what, 6 dudes? I don't even know how many. It doesn't matter. One is enough.
Right.
But, you know, masked up, you know, gun pointing, standing there. It's not even like bam, bam, bam. It's not even cops. It's not even something. you know, it's not the noise that wakes you knowing that something's about to enter into your room. No, they're already in the room, and they're not saying, good morning, Mr. Green. I just want you to know, you know, that we just walked into this crib, and we have this warrant, and we're not even sure if you're who we're looking for, but please understand, you have a gun in your hand, and chances are, if you don't drop that gun, we're going to shoot you.
I mean,
I just,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Ahead,
no, I'm just agreeing with you, man. I'm right there with you. You know, it's, you know, I'm just thinking about policies and procedures, and you know, I mean, you know, in just my little time of doing something like school security and, you know, security for a college for a second, it's, you know, I know it's not police work and it's not SWAT work or the Red Dogs back in the day in Atlanta, you know, but it's still, you have an, I would think, some kind of obligation to do your job, but to make sure you make the best decision and not just about you getting home. I mean, it's about everybody, you, your team, and the people that are in that room or that building. But it's just like, it's, you know, because I'm not a police officer and I haven't been in situations, I don't know what it's like to be in that, but you would think that at, you know, all this time to where we are now, there should be better policies and procedures in place when issuing these no knocks, you know, because this somebody is being investigated for whatever reason. You know, that's not enough.
Well,
time. Six to eight seconds is not enough time to be concerned about anybody else's.
Regardless,
life.
Right? Yeah, I mean, regardless of what, you know, what the police intent is, you're standing in front of somebody who went to sleep secure in a friend's home, you know, and suddenly there's an armed mask person standing in your face screaming and hollering. Anyway, 1972, right? Oh, go ahead, Will, before I start this, man. I don't want to cut you off, bro. I'm sorry. Taking you out of your stride.
No, you're not at all. It's just, again, so many other questions I have. And cause and effect,
well,
you know?
Well, let's see if this answers some of them. Let's see if this answers some cause and effect. 1972, here's the cause. Two things. That's when President Nixon signed a D.C. crime bill, and one of the highlights of that bill was the no-knock, rule. Also in 1972, something else happened. Gil Scott-Heron, 1950 years ago, he wrote No Knock. You know, and his intro to, you know, his no-knock was no-knock. The law in particular was allegedly, this is him talking, Gil Scott-Heron. This is his intro to his song. No-knock, the law in particular was allegedly legislated for black people, rather than, you know, for their destruction. So let me finish this. Authorities and members of the police force no longer have to knock on your door before entering. But here was the idea signed into law. Supposedly it was designed to protect black folks from their destruction. But there's no point in getting to the politics of semantics about, huh? You know, but he went on in his rap. I'm not going to try to do Gil Scott-Heron. I'm not going to, you know, embarrass him like that. You know,
you gonna sing it? You gonna cut it?
No, that's what I said. I'm not gonna get lyrical. I'm just gonna monotone this, cause, you know, I mean, that'd be. What year were you born?
71.
So you were a year old when this bill that we're talking about right now was signed into law. No knock. The man will say to protect people from themselves. No knocking, head rocking, inner shocking, shooting, cussing, killing, crying, lying, and being white. No knock. Nixon signed it into law in 72. It goes on to say, "No knock on my brother Fred Hampton. Bullet holes all over the place, over 1,000 bullet holes." That's me talking now. "No knock on my brother Michael Harris and jammed a shotgun against his skull. For my protection, who's going to protect me from you, the likes of you, the nerve of you?" See, and this is what he talked about, wrote about, sang about 50 years ago. You were 1 year old. You know, I hadn't even gone into treatment yet, you know, for my alcoholism. So I'm already out there tripping anyway, you know, and angry, you know, and ripe for the picking based on how I was living, right? But so here are the themes right here that we're dealing with, you know, that this isn't something that just sprung on us, you know, 50 years ago. And take a look at this, man. You know, Fred Hampton, Mark Clark, nobody ever says him in conjunction with Fred Hampton. They were both broke down. So asleep, you know. Breonna Taylor, asleep. Amir Locke, asleep. You know, so what's up with asleep when it comes to this? I mean, is that the idea? Let's get them when they're sleeping?
Absolutely,
you know, so
the idea.
No chance
absolutely.
To respond.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's... So when we talk about it, this is the thing that needs to be recognized. How do you wake up? You know, how does anybody wake up under normal circumstances? You know, what is normal about this, and how often does it happen when the people like Amir Locke and Breonna Taylor and Fred Hampton and Mark Clark weren't even about what the issues at hand were? Now, people could argue that, well, Fred Hampton, Black Panther, but they were asleep, you know, and the law, the FBI had been casing Fred Hampton for years, but he was a member of the Black Panther Party, you know. Amir Locke, nothing. The warrant wasn't even, his name wasn't even on it. His name wasn't even on the warrant. He wasn't even at his own place. He has no criminal record, and he had the right to have his gun. You know, Breonna Taylor, 2 years ago, nothing has been different from 2 years ago, other than the fact that, you know, the law proved it wasn't against the law to do what the law did, and the only crime that they were guilty of was endangering somebody who lived next door for their reckless shooting. In other words, the shooting that they were doing was lawful. But the bullets that strayed to another person's apartment, that's what they were finally convicted for. You know, so for me, it was frustrating. You know, and you gave the best facts that we have. It doesn't matter. Well, it does matter, but it doesn't matter statistically, because the point has been driven when you said from 2010 to 2016. You know, 81 civilians and 73 law enforcement officials have been affected by this no-knock policy.
So, 13.
What did
13.
I say?
You said 73.
13. Okay. It has been affected by this no-knock policy. So whatever the rest of the statistics are going to say for the next 5 years are just going to, you know, just be more numbers. But it's obviously a question of effectiveness. Is this effective? Is this what people want? When 8 out of 10 of those who are mowed down are black, or as Ari Melber put it in his commentary on MSNBC, or what was it, the term that he used where he said they're either black or black or, doggone it, I can't find it now, which was a good point, of frustration for me to use the term, financially underprivileged is in essence what he said, but that isn't exactly what is the term I want to use, but I can't find it right now. So the point is, people who are, you know, something less than the greater image of the dominant society. See, I said a long time ago, and I'll continue to say it, black folks don't dictate social policy. You know, we just react to it. And people have a hard time with us reacting to it. But what else are we supposed to do when we're not treated like we're free? And when we're not treated like we're American, you know what I'm going to spend some time doing between now and Wednesday? I'm going to look up the root word origins of Negro, you know, because there weren't Negroes in Africa. There were Africans, you know, and I want to find out how Africans became Negroes, you know, just where, you know, and maybe something got lost in the translation. Maybe the idea suggests, well, you're a displaced people that don't really have any recognized lineage, so you're no better than chattel, so you have no business having issues with how we do things here. So maybe the origin of this word would explain why American society is so indifferent to the treatment of us. I think it's a little bit different than those that were native to this country because they kind of knew who they were because they were here. But, you know, America has had this ruthless practice of always either belittling or somehow reshaping or caricaturizing its enemy. You know, it's like a way of desensitizing the people if you can make your enemy look something lesser than the white right. ideal. And it right. seems to be, you know, the constant practice. You know, with Native Americans, you know, and, you know, all the movies I saw as a kid, they were always, you know, savages. You know, they were always ruthless killers. You know, they, you know, every once in a while a movie may have came along like Little Big Man or, you know, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee or, you know, things like that, or even Cheyenne Autumn, kind of, you know. But for the most part, it was never something that suggested that Native Americans were more than just one kind of people. You know, it was always, yeah, they just, you know, they just one tribe, like black folks. You know, we just one indigenous people. We ain't no different. Just if you got one, you got them all. I don't know how many white friends you have, you know, and I don't know how many of your white friends have a lot of black friends. But most of my white friends, you know, I'm kind of the guy. You know, I'm the go-to, you know, and, yeah, it's a strange thing, you know, to contend with being black and male in America. And what's really frustrating for me at 74 is no different than Jackson at 16 and no different than Brandon Jr. at 9, you know, and no different for these young brothers whose names I don't know at 1 or 2. My experience is their experience. Their experience is my experience, and it doesn't matter where we start talking about the experience. We're going to arrive to the same point. To be black and male in America is detrimental to our health. You know, and so anyway, man, that's all I got, man. I'm sorry for, you know, taking up the lion's share of the show again, man.
I can't believe we've already been through. Wow, I didn't even realize what time it is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you, you know, writing down my notes with my pen and paper, of course. You know, and this is Black History Month, as we mentioned in the last show, but mm-hmm. we celebrate Black History every day. And I mentioned last week, just briefly, Benjamin Banneker. And
yeah.
I was doing some more research and going all the way back to Benjamin Banneker. And I'll get on his accomplishments maybe in a second, but the point, you know, I mentioned that Benjamin Banneker wrote Almanac, I believe in 1759. You know, he created a wooden clock when he was 21. He did all these amazing things in this time period, which we've talked about before, when, you know, basically being a black person in America was not good. But when he published the Almanac in 1792, it began with a testimony. And this guy mentioned James McHenry. He says, I consider this Negro as fresh proof. You were talking about that word. You're going to research it. He says, I consider this Negro as fresh proof that the powers of the mind are disconnected with the color of the skin. So
powerful.
Benjamin Banneker accomplished a lot of things. And I can always come back and we can talk about it more. But the thing is that he got all these praises about his work, right? But he found it annoying that the subject of his race was more important to discuss than the accomplishments, you know, like the almanacs. And using these almanacs would help farmers understanding there was an eclipse, that there was a change in the weather. You know, all these things that he was able to predict, it was more about his color than about if what he predicted was true. You know, and I was thinking about you and all the discussions we've had and the things that we've talked about tonight. You know, he was never, you know, it wasn't just Benjamin Banneker, you know, because he was never enslaved. He wasn't like a slave and he broke free labor. It wasn't anything like that.
Right.
You know,
right.
It wasn't just about, you know, it was never, he was never free to just be Benjamin Banneker. You know, it was always Benjamin Banneker, a free black man, you know, Benjamin Banneker, a descendant of Africa. You know, it was always these asterisks, if you will, that was always next to his name, instead of just acknowledging what he accomplished that helped, that's helping us today, you know, even to this day. And I just doing this little research and getting these tidbits of information that I've missed before. You know, and this is one of my heroes, ladies and gentlemen. And I didn't really know about this dysfunctional schizophrenia in 1792.
Amen. Amen, man. Yeah, oh, yeah. Make no, except it wasn't called that then. It was called negritude.
Negritude, right. You mentioned that before. You mentioned that before. Do you remember what that is?
Dr. Benjamin Rush, you know, like, the father of American psychiatry said that the lingering problem of the Negroes in America is that they suffer from negritude, and the only cure was for them to become white.
Right.
Now, I don't know if he meant the skin to become white or if he meant the behavior to become white. And I'm sure as he got older in his practices, he probably changed. I would like to believe he changed some of his beliefs. But that doesn't matter when it comes to those who he affected with his early beliefs, went on to practice what he taught. You know, yeah, so negritude was, you know, you can look it up. I mean, Google the word negritude, y'all, because I know you think I'm tripping. You know, so just Google and see what it says, you know.
But it was,
you know,
it was that.
It's trippy, man.
No, it was that term, and I couldn't remember the term negritude. And that's why I wanted to read you that bit about, in the beginning of his almanac, you know, this white guy was like, look, proof that, you know, black people can be smart. It's not about the color,
man.
You know.
And herein lies the rub. What if, you know, in the 1700s, this was the prevailing attitude to show the intelligence of the people, you know, first, you know, and foremost, you know, to show the intelligence. And then do the biography. You know, how much America would be so different today if that practice had been done. But then there's those who argue that America wouldn't be as much of a powerhouse as it is today. You know, so I don't know. I don't know if you know. I don't know if anybody knows if there's any credence to that at all. All I know is empires come and go. You know, I mean, history has proven that. And, you know, it's always the unrest of the people that eventually does an empire in. The Bible, Old Testament in particular, has proven that. So, you know, I don't know if America is so self. Go ahead.
No, I'm asking the question, what's taking so long? But I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, there's a question. And maybe that's something that we should, you know, write as a book. You know, why does it take so long?
Just thinking about this current empire.
I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about Benjamin Banneker, you know, a story real quick. I was doing a workshop. I was attending a workshop in Rockford. Rockford, Illinois, y'all, is the second largest city in America.
Right.
And it's pretty much divided by a river that runs through it. Black folks on one side, white folks on the other. Now, it may have changed over the years, but that's pretty much how it was back when I had a life. So we talked about maybe 20, 25 years ago. You know, but they have this called the Clock Tower Museum. Yeah, I have a clock tower in. That's where I stayed. And then I couldn't wait. And the workshop was in the Clock Tower Inn, and right next to it was the Clock Tower Museum. And it's because of you. I couldn't wait to get over to the Clock Tower Museum because it was a museum of clocks. And this is, you know, pretty much, you know, what you kind of feel, because I think you're about 7 or 8 when you penned that poem about Benjamin Banneker, and which kind of got me curious.
Yeah, he created the clock. It went tick-tock.
So it got me. I figured, man, Clock Tower Museum, a museum. I went over to that museum, man, and I went through it, you know, pillar to post, you know, no mention of Benjamin Banneker anywhere. How can you have a museum of clocks and not talk about the person who invented the first moving parts? It's amazing to me, man. Anyway, it's all because of you. See, and that's what started it. So it's your fault. You know, if you hadn't done that, Benjamin Banneker invented the clock, tick-tock, you know, I never would have had my first reality check about the dangers of being, you know, invisibilized in America. Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, man.
Man.
Great show, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he created that clock, man, out of wood and memory.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
crazy. And memory.
Man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was no instruction.
Right. It wasn't
it
IKEA.
Amazon.
It wasn't like, you know.
Yeah, IKEA, yeah, I know, man, yeah. Well, I'm saying great show for my own selfish reasons. Adam, I know, has been in the queue all show, and
we're already over, and I actually wanted to acknowledge something he said in the chat room. We can bring him in. I want to bring him in. I hope he's okay to come in. You know, I'm like, what the heck
tonight?
Are
you kidding?
So, Adam, are you there?
Kidding?
Yes, sir.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Hey.
My man.
Hey, look, I want to make it just a, before we get into everything else, I just want to respond to your comment in the chat room. So you asked about Lovie Smith being hired by Houston as the NFL. Is it placating or the real deal? And then Dad responded that Lovie's a great coach, period. And I agree with that. Lovie is a good, great coach. I think that my knee-jerk reaction was, oh, okay, it's just like you said, placating. They're just, you know, trying to do this or do that with Brian Flores' situation. But I really thought about it some more, and I don't think Lovie Smith, he's going to create, this turnaround team, and they're just going to start winning championships. But I think with the situation that, the camaraderie, if you will, Houston, and, they need help. They need, you know, they need a mentor, if you will. You know, it's just kind of in a disarray. And I think Lovie Smith is that type of dude, because he's he kind of reminds me of Phil Jackson, you know, but in his own kind of Zen mode, you know, with his own metaphysical spirituality type beliefs and how he leads. So I think that he's he's that kind of guy who can come in, you know, with that type of skill set to kind of rebuild the foundation, if you will, kind of get them back on track, you know, get them focused, you know. So that's what I'm hoping this coaching decision is. I hope that they're not just.
Brian Flores, he turned around the Dolphins team. They were garbage, and then Brian Flores came in, and he turned around their record. So they had winning seasons once Brian Flores came in.
Right.
So my question about Lovie Smith, it was, all right, well, we have all these issues with hiring black coaches.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're gonna bring Lovie Smith into Houston because he's a black coach, and now we can say, you know, I'm not racist because I have three black friends.
Right, because I got these friends over here, so I'm not racist. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what I'm talking about. That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping that that's not the case. I'm hoping, like I said, that they're doing it because he's, like his dad said, he's a good coach, you know what I'm saying? And I think that he's that kind of coach where he can kind of help these guys get focused. And I'm just thinking as a coach, as a mentor, and you're trying to get these Warriors focused on their purpose, you know, to be champions, to be winners, you know, and this sort of thing, you know. Yeah. So that's what I hope, you know. And that's
I agree. It was just funny that after all of this Brian Lovey stuff came out, like today I got a notification where Houston's hiring Lovey Smith.
But the problem is still there, you know. I mean, even though he was brought in the Dolphins, like that says he had these two winning seasons, he's fired. The problem is that it's still a problem there. And before Lovey was hired, only Mike Tomlin was the only black coach in the NFL. Out of 32 teams, which is still ridiculous. Now it's two. Ooh, it's still ridiculous. You know, with Houston, they're all messed up. So maybe Lovey can help them turn around. And that's what I'm going to put it on that. Again, Benjamin Banneker was concerned about, he didn't want to be talked about him being black. He wanted to show that he was just this brilliant person that provided all these opportunities for farmers and all this stuff. But all people were concerned about was him being black. So again, I think now we have a situation where Lovey, I think that he can help produce a turnaround. Like I said, I don't expect him to produce a championship team, you know, but I think he can turn things around to help improve the state of their mentality. So I just wanted to touch on that. You know, I think Dad and I are on the same page with that, you know, and I hope that they're just doing that because he's black. I think he has this mindset, this skill set, and the patience. I mean, you know, he had the issues with the Bears, and they were young, you know, and they talked about him. They criticized him because he was approaching these young players in a different way, and he wasn't being like this typical, you know, oh, you're going to die. He wasn't that kind of coach. You know, he still produced winners. He went to college, and then he really had an opportunity to work with these knuckleheads and kind of get their heads straight. So, you know, I think it's a good move. Regardless of him being black or white, I think based on his skill set as a coach, I think it's a great move.
Does any of it have to do with Deshaun Watson and his issues?
I think it's the entire team. Whatever issue, whatever individual that individual has, it's all that. You remember in training day, Denzel was like, I got five dudes. I got five sets of problems. I got five guys on my team. I got to deal with these five sets of problems. He's got all these guys on his team. He's got to deal with each one of these problems.
Yep.
That's it. Okay. A Tony Dungy kind of guy. Yeah, definitely. You know, him and Tony, they tight like that. They're like the last of the old school, if you will. let me say this while I'm thinking about it. And Adam, I know you were having some issues in the chat room, and I wanted just to acknowledge everybody in the chat room that's having technical issues. I know that they're like getting kicked out, coming back in, getting kicked out, coming back in. It's just one of those nights tonight, and so I just wanted to say thank you for your patience. And even though you get kicked out, you continue to come back in. I see Sue keep coming back. Adam, like I said, I see you kept coming back, and I saw some other people too. And they probably just said, "Oh, screw it, I would go do something else." But I still appreciate you all taking the time to do that. So, Adam, you good, bro? No. Everything all right?
I am good. I appreciate you guys. I love the show. I'm always here. I'm always here to support you guys. So just keep on doing what you guys are doing.
And we're here to support you as well, man. Let me say we're here to support you too, you know, and I want to make that point for everybody else. So, you know, thank you. We're also here to support you as well, but, you know, thank you. That's all.
And Bill, I love you. That's all I got to say. I love you. Enough said. That's it.
Right on. All right, Daddy-O, you got any closing remarks or anything like that? I think we can, unless Adam had another question, we can kind of land the plane. I think Dad is still there. I'm not sure.
Just watch out for
that. I've been doing the the chat room thing. I answered your question. I said no, but I saw that that wasn't going to work. So, no, man, I'm good. Adam, I love you, Black man. You know that. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love you, Black, Adam. I didn't know you were white, though.
Talking about that comment I made. Like.
Oh, yeah, no, I caught all of that.
Yeah.
I love
all
you
right.
up to the moon back.
That's
I love you up to the moon back.
I had to yank your chain once, man. I'm sorry. All right. Love you all. Love you guys, man.
Hey,
on Atlanta.
One quick thing, if I can. Well, what do you think about Lindsey Graham?
Surprise.
Well, I don't know about Lindsey Graham, you know, and as he continues to address majority and minorities, I don't know, you know.
Oh my God.
I love you guys so much,
good.
Man. I enjoy you guys so much. I appreciate you guys.
Same right, here, man. Adam. And you know
same
y'all
here,
yep. Faces, man. Yeah. All right, y'all. All right, Will.
All right.
Love
well,
you,
ladies and gentlemen, love you too, Dad. Love you, Adam. Thank you, everybody else that's listening in. Love you, Sue. Thank you for always taking time to support us as well. This is the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, ladies and gentlemen. We're here to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experiences, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. Again, holding down that one half, my dad, Bill Green. My name is Will Green. As always, we want you to be safe out there. But as we continue to fight through through the fire and rise from the ashes, and this is a quote from my brother, Brandon, don't cancel out the seeds you planted in faith by digging it up later in fear. Let me say that one more time. Do not cancel out the seed you planted in faith by digging it up in fear. As always, ladies and gentlemen, be safe. Be blessed, and as always, be yourself. Keep your mask on. Take care. Amen. Good night.
I can't remember why I'm feeling
Amen.
This way. I guess I should be crying, but my heart just won't obey. If you'll stay, you'll be happy as I lie here. On the rooftop in the rain, I say.
I can't.